Welcome to Trant. I'm your host, Blossom Babalola, and on here I talk about my career as a software engineer, my career in the tech industry, and sometimes I even bring you lived experiences of other people who have careers in the tech industry, Scrum Master, UI UX designer, and anything that you might ask or want to know. I also talk about my personal learnings and journey, and basically what it's like having a career in tech. So if that's your cup of tea, I hope you hang on for the ride. And if it's not, I hope career is sort of your thing, or just the sort of your thing. I was reflecting on my career in the software engineering field. I was taking stock of the things that I've learned, the things that I want to do moving forward, and, you know, just reflecting on the career. And I started to think about some of the red flags in the companies that I have worked with and that I would be looking out for going forward. And I thought to just make a recording on it, share it with someone, perhaps you find it helpful. So this list is inexhaustible and it's based on my personal experiences. So yeah, I'm just putting out there again that it's my personal experience, and in hopes that it helps someone. So I'm going to be sharing three red flags that I've come to pick up when looking out for companies over the 3 years that I've worked in the SWE field. So the first thing is a lack of scope when working on projects. So many times a red flag I've come to pick up when working on projects is the lack of scope. So basically, when we are working on projects with no clear scope, the project manager can't answer a lot of the questions. There are a lot of holes and gaps, and there are too many iterations, right? The designers are just going based off what they think the project is referring to. There is a lot of back and forth between the developers, the front end and back end, where it's like, what is the project shape supposed to look like? What is the project data? How is it supposed to look like? What are we representing this at? Is it an object? Is it an array? How is this data form? What do we need from the user? And the project manager is basically non-responsive, in the sense that if really or she really don't know what's going on, or she can't answer those questions. And it's a different thing where they need to go back to the stakeholders and have a discussion and fill in some gaps. That's a different thing, right? Like, okay, we didn't cover this edge case, so maybe I'll need to have a meeting and then get back to you guys, the developers. But it's a different thing where they don't know at all, and even after several calls and meetings, they still do not know. And it's like the stakeholders don't know. It's many times always like there's no domain expert on that particular project we are working with, and everyone is just sort of going on with their own ideas, and we are all struggling to put together ideas on what to work on. And what I found most cases in projects like this is that whatever the developers now and the designer and the, when I talk about the developer team, I basically mean all that is made up of, right? The designer, the UX researcher, the project lead, the team lead, the front end, back end, the database, the QA guys. So the developer team, right? So whatever we now decide on and develop, and then the project lead just goes along with it because it doesn't know what the scope should completely cover, right? And then they take it back to the stakeholder, and then it's like they just want a prototype that they can tweak, and then there's this back and forth where we are changing things here and there. It doesn't work well. It doesn't end well with these projects. The developers get burnt out because there's a lot of repetitions going, a lot of repeated work, unnecessary back and forth. This is a big red flag. I didn't think this would be a red flag until I've worked in certain capacities in this certain capacities where the project scope was not properly defined, and I just had to realize that this had a lot of adverse effect on the team. And so going forward, I'll usually ask, like, who is in charge of project scope? Who defines the scope of the project? Who works on user stories? What is the role of the developer in deciding what the project should look like? All these questions become paramount for me to ask, so that I can determine if a company can adequately define a project scope, if they have the appropriate role, such as the product manager, the program manager, the project manager, the scrum master, if they have the appropriate roles to cater for these responsibilities. Next, I have on the list is micromanagement. I used to work at a place where we had to clock in, clock out, you know. It was strict, it was regimented, it felt so choked. There is a different case where, you know, you don't want to be responsible, but when you have your manager looking over your shoulders, you know, what are you currently working on, just comes into the office and like, oh, what are you doing, looks over your shoulders. I mean, this is an actual thing, it's not even figurative. They look over your shoulder like, what are you currently doing on your laptop? And it's very uncomfortable, it's uncomfy. First, it says that you don't trust me, and then it communicates to me that, yeah, I think that you don't trust me. And then because I'm on the edge, right, like I always have to seem productive even when I am not, that actually kills my creativity and productivity, because software engineering is 80% brain work. If I write a line of code and I'm not thinking, best believe that I am writing nonsense, or anyone really, because if you don't think through what you plan to code out, you can't just start coding. That's not just how it works. Thinking is what we are paid for. We are paid to think on how to instruct the computer on what to do, right? So when I feel micromanaged, like, oh, someone is watching over me, I have to act serious so that they don't be like, why are you watching YouTube? Why are you, you know, Googling this? Why are you playing games? Not like you should do these things on company time. But you would understand and agree with me, if you're a developer, that there are times when you need to break away and do other things. For instance, I would mostly read a book. Like, if I can't read a physical book, I'll go to YouTube and read. I'll read summaries of those books and, you know, try to think of anything but that thing at that particular time as a way to rejuvenate and, yeah, get back my productivity juice. But when I feel like I'm being micromanaged and all of that stuff, there is no way that I'm productive. So micromanagement comes in various forms, I've come to realize. Even for remote work, there can be things such as time tracking, video calls, endless meetings and all of that. But for me, it was someone actually looking over my shoulder and questioning every single thing that I did. The third thing is poor management. And now, poor management, I feel like this is so vast in that I've seen various ways that poor management can actually rear its head. But in the case for me, the instance that I did was a lack of structure within the organization, where there was no clear hierarchy, there was no clear growth structure, there was no clear-cut plan, there were no clear definitions for finances, for HR, for who do I report to when a colleague is harassing me, who do I complain to for you know, days off. Like, all of these things that might seem insignificant, especially in a startup structure, which is where I've mostly worked, but it's really, really important. I mean, it really doesn't matter if a company is already earning some sort of revenue in terms of investment and actual customers, then I think that they can start to put all of these structures in place. Even if they want it to be this informal, cool, techie environment, it is still very important that they have structure, as a lack of structure will oftentimes lead down to a breakdown in the overall efficiency of the work environment. And so now, how I would look out for a company management structure, because everyone kind of like talks about strong leadership as part of their company culture now. It's like this catchy phrase to use in the job description. But one of the ways I would look out for this is during the interview process. Now, not many people will agree with this interview process, but that's fine. You don't have to agree. But the ways that I would expect that a company does interview, there's a technical process to see if you get past the on-screening stage. And if you do, you speak with the manager for behavioral. If you do, you probably have a coding assessment like that pertains to the work you want to do. And if you do pass that, then you can now meet the team and see if the team likes you. And if you like the team, speak with a couple of workers and all that. If it's in a startup, you have to talk with the CEO or CFO, because it's not that large of a company. But if it's not, then that step can be skipped and that's all. This communicates a clear structure to me that there's an HR that sources, or a recruitment HR that sources me out for a smaller company that is, and sends me this coding assignment, that there is a manager to talk to, there is a team to meet and see if they enjoy working there, right? This communicates a clear structure, and not all coding interviews might follow this exact list that I just said, but that just communicates structure to me. And during the interview process, when I cannot observe a clear structure, a clear hierarchy, I know that this is a red flag, right? I just know that this is a red flag, that there is no hierarchy, there is just nothing is really going on, just meet with one person and then you have the job. And yeah, that doesn't really work for me. It's a clear red flag that there is no structure, there is no hierarchy, and that it might not really work out best for me. Still on poor management, I feel like one of the facets that I think poor management also raises head is in a family-like company culture. And yeah, I am all for friendships in workplaces. Most people do not agree, but I do not mind having friends in my organization or finding friends within my colleagues. I do not mind. And some of the ones that I found have actually begun to become very strong professional relationships for me. But what I do not agree with is the pushing onto of the "we are all family here" quote unquote ideology in a workplace. Oftentimes, I have come to see that it breeds what's that word now? There was a particular word I was going to use. It breeds this sort of inefficiency is not the word, but when someone wants to use you and want to take advantage of you, kind of, there is a word I was going to use, but I can't find the word in my head now. So yeah, it kind of like breeds that. A company is not a family. A company is a business with everyone providing stellar excellence value so that the company will grow. That is what I want to do. I want to bring so much value to ensure that this company reaches its goal and even smashes it and set new ones, right? That is what I bring to the table. And I expect that is what you expect of me. And then I am accorded the benefits that is due, the work and the value that I bring. But when you start to treat me like family, it just feels like you want me to take a lot of bull crap. And apologies for the language. Yeah, that's just a red flag. This is not a family. You don't call it a family. It's a company. It's a business, and it should be treated as such. It just never worked out. And in this family-like situation, what you would normally see is, but part of it is even micromanagement, right? Because you feel entitled to my own personal space and what I am doing with my personal time. You feel like because we're a family, I should be able to know what Blossom is doing, smiling over our phone. No, you really don't need to know. You don't need to know at all. But because you have that, oh, we are all family here, then she should be able to tell me what she's doing. I can look over. No, 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 no. Please. Ugh, no. So yeah, that's like a red flag to me. That's when I start to see that in job descriptions or hear that in interviews, I start to have this red flag, like, okay, why though? Why are we all like family here? Like, why aren't we like colleagues that respect each other? Yeah, why is family being used and all of that? And this last point will also spill over to something that I want to mention, which is a company with poor work-life balance. And I feel like you might not really know this unless you speak with the team. And it's in speaking with the team that you might really come to know about all of these things, right? When they're like, oh, we're all like family here. I once worked at a place where we had meetings on Saturdays and Sundays. It was even funny, like, it was a lot. I loved to code, I loved my job, but that period was such a stressful time in my life where I was like, I don't know if I can keep on doing this. And then we're expected to put in this ridiculous amount of work. Yeah, not that I have anything against putting a ridiculous amount of work. I'm an advocate for hard work and all of those things, but you can't expect people to work on site full time, spend 8 hours at work, then go back, and the next morning you expected that, you know, they should have done something in their homes during the night. You shouldn't even encourage that. You want your employees to rest, be well rested, be productive and creative. You shouldn't be encouraging that they work outside of work, because then they are burnt out when they come to work, and that is in no way making you money. It's in no way good for the company. It is in the best interest of the company that the employees are well mentally and they get that mental rest by taking adequate rest. So I don't know how companies think, but yeah, I guess it's also a lack of structure that might cause them to not adequately account for all of these things. But these are red flags that I am always actively looking out for now, because yeah, mental health and money is good, right? It's good to earn a lot and all of those things, but I don't think that there is any amount of money you can earn that will buy back time lost, health, bad health, or anything like that. So yeah, let me know if this is helpful to you in any way. And also, as tradition is, it is the first podcast of the month, September, and so I have to tell you about the book that I read in August. I read Think Again by Adam Grant. So this is one book that comes highly recommended. I mean, you should know, if you listen to this podcast at all, that Bill Gates is my my unofficial mentor. And so yeah, this is a book that comes highly recommended by Bill and Melinda Gates. And this book is basically, I mean, the tagline is the power of knowing what you don't know, but I'll really call it the power of questioning every single thing. The first thing I took from this book is you don't know what you don't know, and even the things you know, you really do not know. And so you have to ask questions. Why do I think this way? Why am I this way? Why do I think I am right? Why? Questioning the things you believe in would make you open to learning, growing, and, you know, cementing beliefs that you have. Like, I am of the Christian faith, and I had to go through the process of questioning my faith at some point. Why does this even make sense? Why this? Why that? And I feel that that process was really important, because if I didn't or hadn't, I would just merely be following religion. I'll feel forced. I'll not feel happy. I'll feel like I have no choice but to do these things because I come from the household of faith. Whereas I could have asked questions, challenged the status quo, and gotten answers for myself. This book really teaches the power of questioning, asking questions. Why do you think the way that you think? And if you don't ask questions, you really cannot know. For instance, when I worked at this place with all of these red flags, all I knew was that I wasn't happy, I wasn't comfortable, I wasn't as productive as I would have wanted to. But I didn't know that they were red flags. I didn't know that I had a choice to not do these things. I didn't know that I had a choice to not go for companies that practice these things. I did not know. So I started to read about it and hear people experiences, and they basically tell you, like, just like in a bad relationship, right? Don't go back there. Don't entertain this thing. And that changed my thought, like, oh wow, now I know. But that thought was not even essentially mine. If no one told me that those places, those conditions were bad and I shouldn't condone them, I'll probably go to the next company that has the same thing, and I'll just take it as, you know what, I have no choice. So if you don't question things, you really can't learn, you really can't grow. So I recommend this book, Think Again. I also learned the power of, you know, when you start to question and you live a life full of questions, like, okay, I am saying this now because it is what I currently believe, but then I can learn something new and change and grow. It also affords you the opportunity to convince others, because really, people have different way of views that are not like your own at all. And then you can't just force your opinion, your beliefs and all of that down people's throats. It doesn't work. People want to own their behavior. They want to own their decisions. They don't want to be fed ideas like a dog. In fact, you'll be an intellectual bully if all you do is just force your opinion up. You'll be a tyrant, basically. No one likes tyrants. So when you start to question things, it might also encourage you to ask people to question what they think, right? And even if you think you are right, to question what you think and listen to the other person and try to understand the why behind what they are saying, behind their opinions. And that might help inform yours too. So yeah, if you don't read, because I have a lot of friends who don't read and sometimes feel like, you know what, I tried to read and I just couldn't get past the first page, I'd really, really advise that you get the Blinkist app. I've heard a lot about it, where they just summarize books for you. They're not sponsoring this video. I wish they were, but they are not. And yeah, or you go on YouTube and browse out summaries of this book, the animated videos of it, or if your thing is more reading, read a blog post about it. I think that not reading a book should not be a deterrent in gaining all of the useful information that books has to offer, because someone has taken out time to share a lot and years of knowledge in this condensed form. Books are really, really great. I mean, they are so great. So I think that you should not use, oh, I don't like to read, as an excuse to not try to gain from the book. Try to consume them in formats that you think that you would like to, such as sharing summaries like this. I feel like sharing summaries like this might be helpful to you. And I started to consider even making a whole podcast on just summarizing books. Like, it'd be a whole episode of summarizing the chapters and talking about the key points. I don't know if that would be helpful. Don't let me know if it will be. I'll be glad to talk about books for days. But thank you so much for listening and spending time with me today. I hope you enjoy the rest of your time. Thank you so much for hanging out with me. I hope you learned something new, pondered on something new, or something made this whole episode worth your time. If you had any thoughts or anything you'd like to share, you can find me on my social media platforms as Blossom Babalola, except for Instagram, which is B_Trantin. It's going to be linked in the description, so you don't have to stress yourself about it. I'll see you on my next episode. Thank you for listening and supporting me. Bye.